Silence.
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Prey Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 80 of Nerd Pride Radio. 80, that's 2 to the 4th times 5, but also, if trends persist at their current rate, we will apparently achieve gender equity worldwide in just 80 short years. And I heard that when I thought, God, gender equity in 80 years, that sounds depressing. But then I saw the worldwide notice on that, and I realized, well, okay, 80 years to move from, we got a bunch of nations right now where women have no rights whatsoever, and we're thinking worldwide we'll have gender equity in 80 years? Maybe that sounds about right. Maybe it's still depressing, but okay, that seems a little more reasonable. So, anyway, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I'm awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D slash Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's like 7 other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be your listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my brain anymore. With me, of course, is Lisa, who is asking questions for you so that you don't have to be embarrassed asking them out loud in your workplace. As always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. That's right. Nerd Pride Radio smells like a freshly printed box of Nerd Pride Radio business cards. But more on that in a minute. First, we have to get to the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. The time for me where I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If anything strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list, and the best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, first thing on the master list, a little meta talk.
Oppenheimer!
Meta talk's where I pull back the curtain, talk about the podcast, the website, blah, blah, blah. I got business cards! Did I tell you? I got business cards! This is awesome. I apparently have mentioned on the podcast many times, or at least a couple times, that, boy, it would be so nice to have some business cards in situations like this where I could just kind of hand them out and they'd have my podcast information and it's all right there, and I don't have them, apparently. Well, someone was listening to me. So, Pat and Sarah Beth, took it upon themselves, I'm assuming Sarah Beth mostly, but I'll give you credit too, Pat, took it upon themselves to have me some Nerd Pride Radio business cards printed up and shipped to my house. So I showed up at home last, what, Monday? And all of a sudden, there's a whole box of business cards on my porch. I was so excited. It's got the Nerd Pride Radio right across it, nice and big, got my slogan from zero to pi, blah, blah, blah. And then down at the bottom identifies me as Mike Jones, nerd. So, this is now my official nerd card. If anyone wants to question my nerd cred, and very few do, but if they did, I would have a card to prove it. This thing is awesome. Thank you so much, you guys. I can't express how much it means to me. This is really, really cool that somebody would do something like this for me. So thank you, thank you, thank you. You're the coolest. But enough of the meta talk. Let's get right into a nerd culture report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, Gonzo, but you are very, very close. Didn't know where else to put this, so I'm putting it under nerd culture. You guys watch the Power Rangers short film what is the guy's name? Hold on. Yeah, there it is. Adi Shankar is the guy, the producer who put it together. He wrote it along with James Vanderbeek, also gets a writing credit on this one. And they put together a Power Rangers fan film, which is dark and gritty, and it is ultra-violent and full of swear words and very, very not kid-friendly and not safe for work. But really cool and really fun to watch. I've never been a big Power Rangers fan. It was It was after my time. I'm very familiar with Power Rangers. I mean, to a degree, I'm no expert, but it came along right when Jacob was at the right age for it. Jacob was a huge Power Rangers fan. Aiden was a big Power Rangers fan. And so I've seen enough Power Rangers to know what's going on when I watch this film. But again, it was never my thing. But this fan film is cool. All right, so here's the story with it, though. They put it together. He used all of his own money. There was no Kickstarter. There were no investors or backers. And they're not making a profit off of it. It's a pure fan film done just for fun, not using any copyrighted Power Rangers footage, et cetera, et cetera. And immediately, the guy who owns Power Rangers right now, Saban, I think is his last name, immediately his lawyers put up takedown orders everywhere that they can find it on the internet. You found it on YouTube, you get it on Vimeo, and they put up takedown orders, and immediately YouTube, of course, just takes it down. Because you know what it takes to get something taken off of YouTube? You just tell them it violates your copyright, and they take it down. Do you have to prove that? No. Do you have to review it in any way? Not really. No, you just tell them it violates your copyright, and they remove it. And it was kind of a disappointment, and Shankar made a big statement saying, look, this is a fan film. We're not making a profit off of it. We're not, you know, it's not for money. This is nothing but a labor of love for us. It's a tribute slash parody, and it's just for me. And like I say, we're not making a buck off of it, and so therefore it should be protected. You know, we're not trying to profit off of their copyright. We're not trying to, and of course that doesn't matter to YouTube because they already took it down. And so then it turns out, because I immediately, as soon as I saw it, I know Jacob's a huge fan. So immediately I send a message to Jacob. I'm like, Jacob, you have got to watch this. And I send him the link. And he's like, oh, crap. All right, I don't get off work for a couple hours, but as soon as I get off work, I am watching this. By the time he got off work, yeah, it was already gone. But it turns out that we every article I see on it includes Shankar's statement, thank you, Mark Zuckerberg. Apparently, Facebook decided they weren't taking it down. Shankar hosted it on his own Facebook page, and so the video is just available on Facebook. And I'm sure Saban sent his takedown request to Facebook, and apparently Facebook decided to ignore it, and they left the video up for everyone to watch, which was really, really cool of them. I was very surprised. And now it turns out that they've come to some sort of agreement, and the video is back up. So now you can find the video on YouTube again. You can find it on Vimeo again. It's all over the internet. Go watch it. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. It's worth your time. And the only difference now is it's up with a disclaimer on it that says, oh, this is not officially connected to Power Rangers, and, oh, by the way, it's not safe for work and not appropriate for children. Okay, that's totally fair. And so I'm glad to see that. I'm glad that, you know, yay for fan fiction, I guess. And the only disappointing part is you got to have that much money to do it. If this had been anyone else, it would have been taken down and it would have disappeared, and there's nothing you can do about it because who has the clout to fight something like that? I mean, this is a nice victory, and it sets a good precedent, and it shows us that down the road, it shows us the way things ought to be, that, you know, if you want to make a fan fiction, a fan film, and again, you're not making a profit off of it, you're not trying to infringe on their copyright, it really, this turns out to be nothing but free advertising for Power Rangers. That's really, it shows the film, and everyone knows that it's not official Power Rangers. They know it's not what the new movie is going to be like, but it gets all those fans who were my son, who are now young adults. It gets them really excited about the Power Rangers franchise again. It gets them nostalgic for it. It sends them out to see the movie next summer. I mean, this is nothing but good for Power Rangers. And the controversy around it, I guess, is also nothing but good for Power Rangers. They're going to make a ton of money. And so I hope that in the future, even those of us who don't have millions of dollars and don't have powerful lawyers, I hope some of us also get the same allowances. And get to show our stuff as well. Not that I have anything in particular, but I could. You don't know. You don't know me. Don't judge. So that is where I went on the Power Rangers film. Go watch it. You will enjoy it. It's fun. All right, well, maybe you won't. I have run across one person among my circle of friends on Facebook who is really disgusted by it and just thinks it's kind of lame. Not disgusted in that he thinks it's wrong, but just, it's lame. Everyone does dark and gritty. This is the same dark and gritty as everybody else. It's lazy. It's stupid. All right, that's one man's opinion. The rest of us all understand that, hey, this is a ton of fun. This thing kicks butt. I'm glad they made it for me. All right? What's up next? Oh, here he comes.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
That's right, it's my science corner. That music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. The other day, we're on our way somewhere. It was just me and Eli. And my son asks me, Dad, would it matter if all the elephants on Earth disappeared? And we had been talking about environmental stuff. We had been talking about extinction. We had been talking there. And so I had used elephants as an example in some thing that we were talking about. I can't remember where it came from. But when I used elephants as an example of an animal that might go extinct but is now being preserved and we're trying to, you know. Oh, it was about poachers. Anyway, that's irrelevant why it came about. Anyway, he was curious. So if all the elephants did die out, what effect would that have on us? And my initial answer was, it probably wouldn't make a whole lot of difference immediately. I mean, it's just there's so few of them around right now that I don't think it would appear all that different immediately to people around. But then I started thinking about the Yellowstone story. And in Yellowstone, sorry, I just paused for a minute. Where was I? I was talking about Yellowstone and the wolves, wasn't I? Okay. So here's the story, is that back in the 20s or so, wolves died out in Yellowstone. They were hunted out for lots of reasons. And the disappearance of the wolves led to what is known as a trophic cascade. That is when you remove a top-level animal from an environment, a top-level predator especially, you see a trophic cascade as their prey animals increase, and that causes all sorts of changes. And what happened was, without the wolves, you saw a drastic increase in the number of elk and deer and other prey animals, which then led to them overfeeding on certain types of trees, and the willow and aspen trees started disappearing, which meant that, well, without the willows to feed on, you were seeing less beavers, and without the beavers, you didn't have all the dams on the river, and so the river started flowing differently, which caused more erosion, different problems. You had less plant cover because of all the elk and deer. You had less plant cover to hold the soil in. You had less beaver dams to keep the water in check, and so you wind up with more erosion. It, again, a trophic cascade. There's all sorts of stuff that goes along with it. So a few decades ago, we started reintroducing wolves to the park, and almost immediately they start seeing a change that, well, with the wolves there, the elk are changing their feeding patterns and moving to other areas of the park. They're not doing all the damage to the willows and aspens. The willow and aspens start making their comeback, so we're seeing more beavers. We're seeing more songbirds. We're seeing more vegetation in general, leading to an increase in scavengers because of the... Anyway, it's a wonderful story how the tagline on it is that wolves changed the rivers, that taking the wolves out changed how the rivers flowed in Yellowstone, and bringing them back starts to put all that back to right for us. And I was just fascinated by this story, and I explained this to my son and said, see, so removing one big animal, even though there's not a whole lot of them, removing one big animal from an environment really, really changes how everything goes. And I was especially focusing on how bringing the wolves back made this huge difference. And so therefore, even though I don't think taking elephants out, it didn't seem like something that would make a huge difference. Maybe if all the elephants disappeared from the wild, or they've been disappearing, who knows what changes? Well, someone knows what changes. I don't, because I haven't done this particular research. But I'm sure there have been changes that have resulted from the loss of the larger elephant herds that we've had in the past. And if elephants were to disappear completely, those changes would be exacerbated, accelerated. I'm sure there would be something drastic as a result, some major change in how that ecosystem functions. We don't know what it is, but I don't know what it is, but it could be there. So even though I said it doesn't seem like it would make a huge difference, maybe it could. Because, you know, again, look what happened when we took wolves out of Yellowstone. And so I'm preparing for the podcast here. And so I go out to look up information on the Yellowstone and wolf thing because I want to make sure I get my facts right as I'm talking. And what I find is a very long article explaining how that story is a bunch of crap. I shouldn't say a bunch of crap. But it's a little crap. That it turns out that, yes, the trophic cascade of removing the wolves is absolutely true. That is exactly what happened, and removing the wolves from the environment made this huge difference in every aspect of the park. A tragic difference, really. And when they reintroduced the wolves, immediately after reintroducing the wolves, they start seeing signs that the elk are moving, the elk numbers are decreasing, they start seeing signs that the willows and aspens are coming back. They start seeing these differences, and people were ecstatic, thrilled to death. And so this story of the return of the wildlife to Yellowstone, the change in the wildlife in Yellowstone, the flora and fauna, the change in the course of the rivers as a result of reintroducing wolves, this becomes this huge story that has been repeated many, many times. In fact, my wife, this is why I had to pause, she said, oh, my God, we have that story in one of our books here. And she goes and pulls out the book. Sure enough, there it is, read through almost exactly as I was describing it. And the problem is, and this is what disturbs her so much, is that, well, but it's not technically true, that, yes, it's true that taking wolves out caused all this damage. But it turns out that after this story blows up and becomes a huge deal, well, people started researching to see, okay, exactly what are the mechanisms of that? Are we really seeing what we think we're seeing? And it turns out that elk really, due to their nature, don't change their feeding patterns much as a result of wolves. They still go to the same areas. They still eat the same things. Their numbers can change. And the numbers did decline a little bit because of wolves. But, oh, yeah, they also declined because of severe drought for a while. And, oh, yeah, they also declined because of the removal of the beavers and of some of the fishes from the rivers in Yellowstone. Bear were running out of their more typical food sources, and so bears were starting to take more elk cubs just because, well, they didn't have any other choice. So a lot of that reduction in the elk population that they were seeing right at that moment probably would have happened even without the wolves coming back. Sure, the wolves probably contributed, but it was happening anyway. And the willows and aspens, it turns out that, yeah, we had seen some signs of rebound, but when we look closer, it turns out that we have done so much damage to Yellowstone over the course of decades of this, that they're not going to recover. The willows and aspens in Yellowstone simply are not going to recover on their own. It's not going to happen. If we want the willows and aspens to come back and thus have a bigger food source for the beavers and the whole business, we're going to have to replant them. We're going to have to go in there and actually physically put them back and then guard the saplings from the elk and other animals until they're big enough to stand on their own. That's a huge project. I mean, millions of trees we're talking about, something we're probably not going to do. And so where does that leave us? Because we had this great inspirational story and then kind of gets shot down, and now it feels a little empty, doesn't it? God, I still got to go back and tell Eli about this. I just figured all this out today. I haven't seen him yet. I'll have to go back and tell Eli that, oh, that story was not quite true. But what happens then is we do have a valuable story, all right? And yes, it may be a little bit mythical, but we have a valuable story that highlights what can happen, especially when you look at the decline portion of it. It's a valuable object lesson that look at the damage we could do simply by removing one creature from an environment. Look at what happens. And while the inspirational legend of all the stuff coming back just because we put wolves back, that can inspire people and motivate people, and it's really cool with that, but do we want to use misinformation to do it? And that was what this article, this guy was saying, is that he loves the story, and he wishes it were true. It's what should have been happening as we're bringing the animals back, but he says it also, while it's inspirational, it downplays the seriousness of it. It downplays the complexity of an ecosystem, the complexity of a place like Yellowstone, like any place on Earth, that it's not, you know, if we've done all this damage, it's not as simple for us to put it back as just, oh, well, we've brought the wolves back. And, you know, and the people who work there, the people who make this their life, they know this already, and they're already working hard in lots of ways to try and restore Yellowstone as much as possible. But for the general public, people need to know it's more complex than that. And we don't like complex because, you know, if you can't reduce it to a soundbite, if you can't reduce it to a single Paul Harvey inspirational message, then it's really not worth our time. Too long, didn't read. But it's worth our time to know. It really is. And And then the other comparison he made, and this I thought was very illustrative. Illustrative? I don't know. Whatever, however you would pronounce that word, is he said, you know, on the other side, there's even if the wolves are doing good for the park, and they are, there are people out there for whom the wolves are a real problem. I mean, there are still ranchers in the area, and there are people living in the area, and there's all sorts of reasons why the wolves are problematic for certain people. That's why we hunted them to extinction in the first place. The wolves are problematic. It's great to have them back, but they're hurting some people, hurting their livelihood. And so for people like that, stories have sprung up that say that that bringing wolves to Yellowstone is, you know, government interference in natural processes, that wolves are not native to that area, which is a lie, that wolves have been causing all this damage, and wolves have been there are myths on the other side to support their side that also are not true. And so he says, so while our myth may be inspirational in showing, oh, look what happens when we bring them back, when we try and preserve land, he says, is it really worth fighting an untruth with another untruth? Isn't it better to try and explain honestly what's out there and what needs to be done? And he pointed to a much longer actual scientific paper that shows studies of trophic cascades of the, you know, 30, 31 large predators, largest predators on the earth, not including whales and dolphins, but of land-based large predators. What happens when they are threatened? And this study goes through the trophic cascades and it was all in technical jargon and it was way beyond my capabilities. But the upshot is, yeah, this is a very real thing and it's happening all over the world with all sorts of large animals, because the large animals, the large predators especially, are in a lot of danger from us because they're already rare to start with because they're at the top of the food chain and they tend to be pretty dangerous. And so we tend to hunt them and we tend to force them out. And so it is a lesson that we need to be better with our world. But it's just such a shame that story wasn't true. I mean, to be able to tell that story, it's so simple and focused. And Eli, as an 11-year-old, could not only immediately understand everything I was saying to him, but was inspired by it. And you could just see it changing how he was thinking about stuff. And now to have to go back to him and go, okay, the lesson from that is still good, but oh yeah, here's the truth. It's really hard to do. I don't know if I want to. You know what I mean? Sometimes that myth, that happy myth, is just a lot easier, isn't it? Well, anyway, I don't know if I have anything more to say on that topic, but it was just it was fascinating to me. I loved the original story, and I even enjoyed the crushing downfall of it. Simply because it changed my expectations of things. It changed how I was looking at stuff, and that is always interesting, even if it's not always happy. So, there you go. I know what's next up. Roku! Okay, what have I been watching on Roku lately? On my streaming from Netflix, mostly. We are watching Breaking Bad. We're well into the first season. We've finally gotten over the mid-season hump, and we're to the point where, oh, yeah, now it all kicks in. I love the relationship between Walter and Jesse. I'm really getting into it. I mean, it's been interesting all the way along, but in a series where everyone's bad to some degree, you got to figure out who you're going to like and who you're going to root for. And, like, we watched Sons of Anarchy we watched a lot of episodes of Sons of Anarchy and eventually gave up on it because it just, there wasn't anyone that we were rooting for yet. They're a bunch of bad dudes. Even the good guy is a bad dude. And it was tough. And I think we will go back to Sons of Anarchy. Getting through this hump on Breaking Bad has shown me that, you know what, let's give it a few more episodes. Because Sons of Anarchy has a lot to love, but it just wasn't quite grabbing us. And so now Breaking Bad really has, and I'm really excited about it. And to go along with Breaking Bad, I told you we were watching Malcolm in the Middle, still doing that. It has now become our nightly routine that the kids come home, we get started on homework, we get some supper, we watch one episode of Malcolm in the Middle, And then everyone gets everything finished up, and then we have relaxing time in the evening or whatever. We're watching pretty much one episode of Malcolm in the Middle every weekday. That's just our regular evening show, and we love it. Everyone in the family is really enjoying the show. Good times. Still watching X-Files, but it's a slow process because I have to watch two episodes of X-Files, and I have to listen to Camille's podcast, and so it's slow going. And then Black Mirror. You've heard of Black Mirror. It's that sci-fi anthology Twilight Zone-ish show about modern technology, and hour-long drama from England, I assume, and because everyone had British accents. And Black Mirror is just really good. I've only seen the first episode. I've heard raves about it. I've only watched the first episode. I really enjoyed it. And it turns out it's finally on Netflix is why I'm bringing it up. It just happened a couple days ago. So if you've been wanting to watch Black Mirror, you've got Netflix, now's your chance. Go see it. And also on Roku, and this is why I actually had this whole segment. I didn't need to do a review of everything I'm already watching. One to look for coming up, it's going to be on YouTube, which I will watch on my Roku, is watch for Really That Good. Really That Good is going to be by Movie Bob, and Movie Bob already has a movie review show that he does on YouTube, and he has a video game show that I think it's Game Overthinker, and he already does those, but he's doing a new show called Really That Good, and it hasn't started yet, but he's got a little announcement trailer thing out there for it. And it's going to be about beloved movies and why we enjoy them. And it's not going to be picking them apart, because every movie can be picked apart if you want to do that, and I hate doing that. It's going to be things like Raiders of the Lost Ark, things like The Matrix, things like It's a Wonderful Life, movies that are universally beloved and those nostalgic movies that everybody loves, everybody has this frame of reference for, and he's going to be going through one of those movies per episode is what it looked like, and he'd go through a movie and break it down and go, here's what makes it magical for us, here's why it has stuck in our cultural consciousness. Here's what's awesome about that movie. And he's talking about, he's tired of people tearing stuff down. This is just him talking about movies that he loves and that in general everybody loves and why. And I just think that's so cool. That's the sort of uplifting, positive thing I would love to see. So I'm going to keep my eyes out for that one. I'm going to watch Really That Good when it comes out. I'm hoping it's as good as I'm hoping. So there you go. That's about it for the meticulously plotted portion. I should do a little cleanup, though. No, I'm kidding. I've been asked not to do that song anymore. Look at that. God. See? My wife doesn't listen to the podcast. You should have seen her eyes bug out when I started singing the cleanup song. So no. Tell you what. Let's put in a different song for cleanup that is maybe more palatable. Hold on.
Start wearing purple, wearing purple.
No, I'm kidding. I'm not going to use that one either. I'm just joking. I don't know. I'll probably still sing the cleanup song every time I do it, but I will also be aware of how gratingly annoying I'm being when I do it. Okay? Are we cool with that? Cleanup here on my list, new dog. I'm not ever going to go into detail on this, but I put this one on because my in-laws got a new dog, and it just started coming around their property. It just started showing up one day and wouldn't let anyone get near it, wouldn't come close. But if they set food out for it, it would come eat. And he said, "What is he, a border collie?" Yeah, a border collie. And good-looking dog, and was also a good work dog. Like, would go out and herd the animals with my father-in-law. And he would call out orders, so it wouldn't come near him, but it would help herd the animals, and he'd call out orders for it and tell it, "Yeah, no, you need to go around that way." And the dog instinctively knows where it needs to go. I mean, I'm not guessing that it's understanding English necessarily, but as he moves into position, the dog knows where it needs to be to help move this herd in the right direction. And when I say herd, I'm talking, a dozen animals, but the dog was good at it, and so knew what it was doing, and was right there on top of it helping out. And my mother-in-law and father-in-law both fell in love with this animal. And both of them, it was really funny because through the whole process, when you would ask about it, each of them would pretend like, "Yeah, no, this is for the other one." but they both love that dog. And it turns out that it has finally they went through this whole process. They had a charitable organization, animal organization, that was helping them out to try and safely capture the dog so that they could, you know, give it a checkup, get it cleaned up. It had find out if it actually belonged to somebody, because there was a missing dog that was similar in appearance, and the missing dog had a chip in it. So if this was the right dog, they could, you know, if they could capture it, then they could return it to the proper owner. Turns out it wasn't. No one's made. Yeah, it wasn't even the right color dog ultimately. And so they went through the processes. Nobody claimed it. Nobody, we couldn't find where it belonged to. So my in-laws got to keep it, and they loved it. What'd they name it? It's Rusty. There you go. And Rusty is, again, he's a good work dog and beautiful. They cleaned him up and all this, and beautiful, beautiful dog. And he loves my mother-in-law, sticks to her like glue. Anywhere that she is, he wants to be right there. If anyone else approaches him, especially any man, the dog is frozen with fear until you move away from him. He doesn't snap. He doesn't bite. He doesn't run away. He's there in the house. I come in, and he's right there by the front door. So I come in, and I start talking nice to him, and I reach out to pet him. And he'll let me pet him now. But he is also, you can tell, he kind of cringes back, and he just freezes there. And he will not move at all. And so I reach up, I pet him. He's obviously not enjoying it, so I stop. But I'm still talking nice to him, and I walk off. And then once I finally walk away from him, once I'm about 5-6 feet away, he finally relaxes. But I don't know what happened to this dog. I don't know where he grew up. I don't know how he came to this point. But he is a really, really smart dog who is paralyzed by fear when approached by men. And I don't know if he reacts that way to women. I haven't seen, again, he loves my mother-in-law. One of the nieces was over there the other day and got to play with him, and he was just fine with her. But just paralyzed by fear. Just, it hurts your heart to see him. It really does. So I'm glad he has found someone to bond with. I'm glad that he's being shown some love, and hopefully that helps him heal. Hopefully Rusty can eventually warm up to other people, but we'll see. So he's in a good place. So it's good for him. So that was the new dog. What else do I have on cleanup? I'll use that one. Saturday Night Live. I love Saturday Night Live. I've always loved Saturday Night Live. And I'm fascinated by the history of it. I love the behind-the-scenes material about it. It's a topic that I know a lot about. And it's also a show I haven't watched in a few years. Even when I'm awake on a Saturday night, and of course I don't have cable TV now, but when I did, even when I'm awake on a Saturday night, I'm not really... I don't know. I just never really tune in much. But I've tried in recent months. I've tried a few times, and every single thing I've watched is just idiotic. Saturday Night Live just sucks. In the last couple of years, every time I've tried to watch it, and mostly it was, I'm tuning in after the second musical performance. So I'm getting the stuff at the end of the show, or I'm showing up right around Weekend Update. And Weekend Update is always pretty good. In general, but I'll be showing up, midway or later through the show. And so maybe those aren't their best sketches. Maybe I've just caught them at bad times. But, after a half dozen, it's like, they're really sucking. And so I'll just click away. Well, now a couple times I've gotten to catch right at the beginning of the show. I'm watching their cold open. I'm watching the first sketch and the fake commercial. And it still sucks. I don't get it. I must be old. I don't know what it is. So that's why I put SNL onto my master list. And then I realized I didn't have a whole lot of interesting stuff other than that to say, just that it's kind of depressing because I've always loved Saturday Night Live, and it's still going. And, they just had their big 40th anniversary special, and they're going to keep going, which is good for them. But it's either really not funny or I just don't get it. And either way, that makes me sad. So there you go. Now I can cross it off of my list. And that is the end of the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. You know what that brings us to? Go on, make a guess. Yeah, you're right. The Pod-O-Matic! hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. Where is it? Damn it. See what happens when I get my script in place? At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do those topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? Then you send your question or your topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on our forums. I'll add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. Thank you for the new entries that came in this week. I encourage everybody, go ahead and submit me two or three Pod-O-Matics this week, or 20 if you're in the mood for it. But send me your questions. I am thrilled to death to get them. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And my first number is 31. 31 is from, it's from Humongous. And Humongous says, I'm sure I've answered this one. Humongous says, bacon or sausage? And the answer is sausage. Clearly sausage. I love bacon. Lord knows, bacon is good. We just did homemade pizza the other day, and in addition to the usual beef and pepperoni and all that, we also had sausage and bacon available. We had this full spread, and a little bacon on the pizza was really, really good. But I am always a fan of sausage. You send me to fast food for breakfast, McDonald's or Burger King or whatever, I will always take the sausage sandwich over the bacon one every time. That's just me. Yeah, that's all I need to say on that one. All right, 16. 16 is from Zimny. Hey, Zim. Good to have you on the show. Zimny says, what is your favorite type of mythological quadruped? That is really specific. My favorite type of mythological quadruped is probably the griffin. I enjoy the griffin just because it looks cool. I mean, you know, there's lots out there, and I'm sure there are others that are pretty cool. I mean, because one of my first thoughts is dragon, which not necessarily my favorite mythological beast, but dragons are pretty cool, depending on how they're done. But then it occurs to me that is a dragon technically a quadruped since it is a six-limbed beast? I mean, are birds considered bipeds? You know? Well, they are because they walk on 2 feet, much as humans are bipeds because we walk on 2 feet. So therefore, the six-limbed dragon only walks on 4 of those legs when it chooses to walk. So therefore, I guess it's technically a quadruped. Oh, God, and the griffin has wings, too, so that technically is also a six-limbed beast. I am way off on this, as is the Pegasus, as the... All right, then if I'm going to include griffins, I have to include dragons. I'm still going to pick griffin. All right, don't get me wrong on that one, but I'm trying to think of if I'm missing any. But no, I think we're good on that. 99. Way down at the bottom of the list we find Ronster. All right, Ron says, tell us about the worst headache you ever had, figurative or literal. All right, the worst literal headache I've ever had. I had a series of them when I was a kid, right around the time I was about 7, 8, 9 years old. Horrible, horrible headaches that I think were sinus related, but because I was a kid and I didn't see them coming is the problem. Nowadays, you know, you can feel a headache coming on. You're like, I'm a little achy. Maybe I should take something and head this off at the pass. And if I had known to do that when I was a kid, I don't think I would have had these problems. But being 7 or 8 and not paying attention to anything anyway, I don't think I ever noticed until it was a full-blown headache. And then once it gets to that point, yeah, you can take some medicine. You can do whatever you want. It's not going to get any better until you get some sleep. But that's what happened to me every time. And they would be blinding and miserable, and I would cry. And eventually, I would just take medicine, put a hot cloth on my head. Someone would come in and talk nice to me until I finally fell asleep. And then whenever I woke up, I was fine again. Those were miserable. 93. Is that 90? Yep, 90. 93 is from Ronster again. Hey, Ron. What is the smartest thing you have ever eaten? That is a great question. Probably pig. Can't imagine that I've ever eaten anything smarter than a pig. I've never eaten dog, and dog is questionable. Pigs are probably smarter. I've never tried horse. Right, right. If dolphins got caught in the tuna net, then potentially dolphin. But no, I don't think I've ever eaten dolphin. Whale, elephant. What else is smarter than pigs? I have never eaten a parrot or a crow, because crow would win. That's a whole segment. You know what? Hold on. Let me put that on the master list, because animal intelligence, the stuff I've seen, because I've always been fascinated with sign language chimps and sign language gorillas. I've been fascinated with dolphins and their communication skills. And in the last few years, the evidence of smart crows, corvids, so crows and rooks and ravens and the whole family, the intelligence level of corvids is phenomenal. Holy crow. So, hold on. Holy crow. See how funny I am? Let me write down corvids. I'll know what that means, right? And if not, when I get to clean up and I say, why the hell did I write corvids on here? You guys can remind me. Yeah, what? Mina birds. Yeah, mina birds are, I don't even know. They might be corvids. I don't know. Lisa says she's never eaten a mina bird, but she would happily do so if it was offered. Oh my God. They had her parents had a bird. They've had lots of birds over the years. But this bird, this mina bird was the single most annoying creature ever. It was the bane of her existence for a while in high school and college. This mina bird apparently came out of a pet shop where it had been in this pet shop for years, and it could do absolutely dead-on perfect imitations of most of the animals that you would see in that pet shop. It could do perfect imitations of all the squeak toys that were stored near it. It knew tons of phrases, and yeah, hello was its favorite, because when the door opens, when the phone rings, hello, all right, that it just knew that one right off. But then also it got to the point where it would immediately go, hello, shut up, because that was immediately what came after hello every time. So it knew once you said hello, you immediately go to shut up. It was really, really talkative in a really annoying way and kind of vicious. It specifically really hated my wife. I don't know why. Probably she had really, really long, thick hair at the time, and it would just go after her. I mean, it once wound up attacking her, and its beak came down her back and left a gash. I mean, it was vicious, vicious, mean bird. As Lisa hated that bird. She would happily eat that bird. Her brother, on the other hand, would have happily eaten the pony that they had. So Trigger was the bane of Bill's existence, because that sucker, that pony could escape from anything. It didn't matter what fence you put up. It didn't matter what corral you put it in. It would literally be a matter of hours. And, oh, there's Trigger running down the driveway. I mean, he just got out, and then whenever he was bored, he'd head back in. Trigger was just Bill offered his dad money to let him go shoot that pony. He would happily have put that thing down. He hated it so bad. Anyway, that's off topic. The smartest animal I've ever eaten is probably a pig. I can't, or a toddler. Which one is smarter? Is a pig or a toddler smarter? Yeah, so still pig. Definitely. 84. 84 is Ronster again. He's on a roll. Let's go for the hat trick. Ronster says, do you like Biscoff cookies? Who doesn't like Biscoff cookies? You know, who doesn't? People who've never tried Biscoff cookies and who have no idea what they are. Oh, those things are great. I don't remember why he came up with them, but Yancey brought in some Biscoff cookies to work at one point. Absolutely loved them. They are spectacular. Yeah, a little bit of research here tells me that the name Biscoff comes from a combination of biscuits and coffee, because these are a cookie traditionally enjoyed with coffee. They are a European cookie originally, and they have this kind of graham crackery, I don't know, almost butterscotchy kind of taste. It's more graham crackery, but they're just, man, they are really good cookies. In addition to the cookies, the other thing that Yancey brought in was the Biscoff spread. Oh, It's like Biscoff cookie, but in peanut butter form that you just, put out on some toast or on what, really good stuff. I love Biscoff. It's awesome and tasty. Definitely worth trying out if you ever run across it somewhere. Try a little Biscoff, especially the spread. Really good. 38. 38 is from, let's see, Ronster. Wow. All right, Ronster says, best work prank you have ever performed. The best work prank, well, okay, first off, work pranks are super easy in my office because Yancey is scared of anything, all right? Yancey is easily startled, so literally put a piece of bubble wrap underneath one of the wheels of his chair so that when he sits down, it pops, he will jump and scream. It is really funny. But the best work prank I've ever pulled would be when we got a load of computers in and we had 200 machines, 250 machines. And so I took all of the speaker boxes, which are about the size of bricks, and I used the speaker boxes as bricks to build a chimney around Yancey's chair. So it went around his chair at the back, and I built it up so it was only a half chimney as it started, but then when it got up to the level of his desk, it then continued out to form a full square that covered parts of his desk. So his keyboard, his mouse, his pens and pencils were all trapped inside this chimney, and I built it up. It was a good 6 foot high. And that was pretty cool. And of course, really it was pretty easy to clean up. He just came in and, we played around with it for a little while, and then eventually he knocked it all down and we had to clean up the boxes. So that was the tough part. But I did that in response to, because Ronster's second part of the question is, been on the receiving end of. I don't know if this is really so much a prank, but it was really cool that Yancey had those exact same speaker boxes, these brick-shaped speaker boxes, were set up in the office so that we have a kind of a long office. And so when I opened the door, I bumped into the first one, and he had like a good 100 or so of them all set up like dominoes around the room. So I open the door and it bumps into the first box, and I get to sit there and watch as the domino pattern falls all the way around the room. That was pretty good. We also used boxes in a similar fashion. We get lots of empty boxes. We had styrofoam. And so we used the styrofoam inserts. You could also use like bricks, and we built a brick wall out of styrofoam inside Joel's office so that when he opens his door swung out into the hallway. When he opens his door, the entire doorway is completely blocked by this white styrofoam brick wall blocking his entire office, which thrilled him to no end because then he got to have someone take a picture of him while he yelled, "Hey, Kool-Aid," and then broke through it. So it all paid off in the end. You got some?
I don't know. Oh,
hold on. My wife has a story I might not be able to tell you. Let me pause and find out what it is.
Oh,
guess what? You guys don't get to hear that story. But that was a really good one, though. Oh, man. Hold on. Let me laugh a little bit longer so I can just tease you with these awesome possibilities you don't get to hear. Okay, here we go. 93 is one we've done already, I'm pretty sure. Let me go down and check. Hold on. 93, we did. 91. Let's try that. 91 is from, it's from Mrs. Darks. All right, Mrs. Darks. Sarah Beth asks, F. Mary Kill, Alton Brown, Chris Hardwick, or Jamie Heineman? What a great question. all right, these are all nerds in very different ways. And I love all three of them, so this is very, very difficult. I am going to marry Chris Hardwick because Chris Hardwick is fun and joyous and shares tons of common interests with me and would be fun to hang out with forever. So there's my Mary. That one's down easy. Now, that leaves me F and Kill. For a Wild Night of Passion, see, that's the problem. I love Jamie Heineman. He may be my favorite of these three people. But as much as I enjoy watching Jamie Heineman on the screen, I can't imagine F or Mary with him, so I'm going to have to kill Jamie Heineman, which leaves me only for a mad, crazy, passionate night of sweet, sweet lovemaking with Alton Brown. Although, do I just want to marry him for the food? Oh, now this is tough. I'm going to let it stand. I got to marry Chris Hardwick. I got to. Seriously, how else would you handle that one? I can't pass on Chris Hardwick. Yeah, we're going with it. That's a repeat. There, 58. Way better. All right. 58 is from Zimny. Again. And Zimny says, what is a better pet? A Tribble or a Mogwai? Ugh. That's terrible. All right, so would you rather have a Mogwai from Gremlins or a Tribble from Star Trek? A better pet? The Mogwai. I guess because he was sweet and he was cute, and I suppose if I can somehow manage to never get him wet or feed him after midnight, then I suppose I would be okay. Well, see, here's the problem. My wife is rolling her eyes at me because obviously there's no way I could possibly be responsible enough to ever manage this. Okay, I get that. However, here's the thing. A Mogwai, you at least have a potential for not screwing things up and causing a global disaster. Whereas with a Tribble, the Tribbles just reproduce forever. I don't have any control over that one. How'd they fix the Tribbles in the end? What'd they do to make that better? I don't remember. At least the Tribbles, though, are just a force of nature, whereas the Mogwai, once they turn into Gremlins, they are active evil. All right, you know what? In that case, yeah, no, Tribble makes a better pet, because I'm going to screw it up either way. At least the Tribbles aren't malicious. So we'll go with Tribble on this one. 88. 88 is from Direcat. Direcat says, what is the worst pet you've ever had? We are getting a lot of pet questions today. This is weird. Or a lot of pet references, I suppose. What is the worst pet I've ever had? I don't know. I've enjoyed all my pets to some degree. I mean, I had the first dog we had when we got married was a little rat terrier, and she was just a shaky, pissy little thing. She was a submissive peer, and so every time you approached her to show you that you were in charge, she would pee. I mean, no matter how nice we were, no matter how sweet we were, she would pee the minute anyone approached her and tried to touch her. People who didn't know us and didn't know the dog would think that we beat her the way she acted. It was just terrible. And she also liked to eat our laundry. So, liked to eat the tags out of the laundry. Tore up, I mean, hundreds of dollars worth of shirts. Ate the entire corner off of a couch. She was just not a good pet. Just a terrible, terrible dog. Yeah, and I'm not saying I'm the greatest pet owner in the world, definitely, but man, she was a bad dog. Ugh. But, I mean, like I say, there's been plenty of pets that we've had, and then we kind of wish we didn't after a while, but they were fun while when I was in college, we had mice for a little bit, and the mice were fun, they were really cool, and then eventually we had way too many mice. And so then, you know, what do you do with them? But for the most part, I like animals, but I'm also to the point where, if you can't tell every time I refer to the guinea pigs, yeah, I'm also ready to be done with them too. I mean, you know, we like our dogs, they're great. We like our guinea pigs, yeah, whatever. But eventually they'll be gone. The guinea pigs within the next year will probably be dead of old age. And then, the dogs, by the time all the kids are out of the house, the dogs will probably be either gone or on their last legs. They're already, I mean, Sam's, what, 7 now or 6? I can't remember. But he's getting on, middle-aged. And I think once the animals are gone, I don't think we're replacing them. Once the kids are out of the house, I have no urge to have another dog. I will have urges to have cats, and then I will remind myself that I don't really want an animal in my house. So, eventually you get tired of all of them. It happens. My brother, when we got one of our dogs, I can't remember which one. We got Sam. My brother said, yeah, you're going to get the dog. You're going to love the dog. But let me tell you what, 2 months from now, you're going to wish you had never gotten a dog. And I said, oh, please, there's no way. It took longer than that. But, yeah, eventually it's like, oh, man, it's so much work and it's so much. I mean, I love Sam. I love Sam. I love Pip, and they're good dogs. But they're also a lot of work and a lot of things to remember and their hassle here and there. And so, I mean, I'm never getting rid of them. But when they do pass on, I'm also probably not going to replace them. Now, and let's also note that when my brother said that, that was for him, I don't know what, 7 dogs ago? I mean, they continue getting not just dogs, but huge dogs. So they've had how many big animals? The snake, the rat, the tarantula, the – I can't tell you the number. I mean, they've got 8 kids in that house, and so they wind up getting lots of pets. So did you have something to add, Lise? No, that's true. Once the kids are out of the house, we're also not replacing them either. No more kids. We're done. So, right. No, love them a lot. I think our kids are pretty cool most of the time. But yeah, you know what? Once they're gone, you know what? We will be thrilled to enjoy some us time. That's what I'm saying. Anyway. 79. I think we're getting down towards the end on this one. Maybe just this one or maybe one more after. We'll see. 79 is from my son Noah. Oh, this is good. Noah says, Dad, what would you name a new molecule? Ooh. That is a great question from a kid who wants to be a chemist. What 8-year-old, and actually he's been saying this for a year, so what 7-year-old says, hey, I want to be a chemist when I grow up? No, that's this kid. So, and so he wants to know, what would I name a new molecule? I don't know. Do I have to go in the same format as all the old ones? Oh, well, no, I guess no. I'm thinking new element. I don't, because, you know, the new elements already have names. Even, you know, once we discover them, people have already got dibs on that crap, and I will never discover a new element, so I will never get to name one. And if I did discover it, it would only be one that, you know, lasts for, you know, a thousandth of a second before decaying. So it's really not even that valuable, is it? All right. But a new molecule, well, it depends on what it does. This is a very difficult question. Because, you know, in my heart, I want to say something like, you know, nerdium or something like that. But it doesn't have a ring to it. Yeah, geektonium. That's a good one. See, my wife's on top of this. I think I'm going to go with Roscoe. 59. Last one. Oh, it's from my brother Kyle. Kyle, who isn't listening to this podcast anyway, so why should I bother to answer his questions? What has he done for me lately? Yeah, that's what I thought. Kyle says, hey, it's another F. Mary Kill. Ronald McDonald, Grimace, or the Hamburglar? Oof, that is a hard one. I am going to marry... All right, I know I don't want to marry the Hamburglar. I'm positive on that one. So do I want to marry Ronald, who seems like he would get a little overbearing after a while? Or do I want to marry Grimace, who would grow tiresome with his stupidity? I mean, it's like marrying Patrick from SpongeBob, really. I've got to marry Ronald. And plus I think Ronald has more money. So, you know, even if he's a little overbearing, you know, at least he'll buy me nice things. So that'll count. So that leaves me to kill or sleep with Grimace and or Hamburglar. Man, this is tough. You know what? I'm going to kill the Hamburglar. He deserves it. I've always hated the Hamburglar. I'm going to kill the Hamburglar, and therefore, I will snuggle all night long with Grimace. I will snuggle him hard. Is that what you want? All right. I'm going to stick with that answer. We're good. And that is the end of the Podomatic. Therefore, We need to turn to GLaDOS to get ourselves a recap of this episode. Go on, GLaDOS.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was She Blinded Me With Science, as performed by William Shatner. All my songs are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I shouldn't call them my songs. All the songs that I use in this podcast are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't include them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you want to do something nice for this podcast, recommend it to a friend. If you enjoy it, spread the word. Let other people enjoy it. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on my free games page. Instant Game, Animal Ball, Melee, Sandbox Hill, two-thirds of a dozen others, all free, all the time, maybe to include Pariah or some version thereof coming up. I'll keep you posted. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com. I keep forgetting that. Why? I promise I will actually respond to you. You can find me on Twitter, where my handle is @nerdprideradio. I have gotten really bad about using my Twitter. I am going to try and step that up, especially in terms of promoting this podcast. Oh, darn it. There's another thing I got to add to the master list. Hold on. Promotion. There we go. Got it. All right. Or you can check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. Hold on. I can't spell promotion while I'm talking. There we go. Awesome. But to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me, you guys know this, is you come over to my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there. You send me a message. We will hang out together. We will become best friends in the world. We will have fun. Guess what? There is no listener betrayal this week because I am recording from school where I did a few tests. Well, all right, I did one test. I'm exaggerating. But I did one test and the sound came out good. I've had problems here before, so I'm hoping that the sound quality has been good this episode. Fingers crossed. But I'm recording from the school, which means I have no way of getting onto my website from here. Left the smartphone at home and my internet access to Nerd Pride Radio is blocked by the school. So therefore, I couldn't set you guys up to do listener betrayal. So I'm very, very sorry. So instead, see, we just fall back on R2 one more time. And R2 says it is 67. Back to the list. 67 is, hey, Talvin. All right, someone we haven't heard from this week. Talvin says, should the U.S. begin another space shuttle or similar program so they are not as dependent upon Russia or other nations to launch astronauts to the International Space Station or perform other space-based programs, satellite repair, etc.? So, essentially, should we be doing something to get ourselves into space instead of relying on others? What's our involvement in SpaceX? Well, how much of that is coming from us? Are we providing funding? Are we providing materials, staff? Are we, how are we getting up there right now? Is it all Russia? Who's taking us to the space station now? Holy crap, I just realized I am woefully ignorant on this matter. I am glad to see, private endeavors that are working on getting us to space. I'm just fine with seeing us contracting with, private companies who are willing to do this, although, I'm worried that, you know, it's not like this is going to be an area where there's a huge amount of competition. So therefore, you can say it's cool to see us contracting out to private enterprise. But is private enterprise going to be any more efficient than government on this one if there's only one company doing it and they know they've got us over a barrel and they can charge pretty much whatever they want? I mean, I hate to be cynical about it, but there's advantages both ways. I mean, when government takes on a project like that, things can become bloated. Things are full of pork. There are issues with it. But it's also, for security reasons, for other reasons, it's all completely in our control. When we do private companies, if we're not going to have real competition out there, then I don't think getting a private company is all that much improved over just having the government do it. So hard to say. I don't like being reliant on Russia simply because tensions are a little high right now, and you certainly don't want to fall back on that. But the European Space Agency is doing all sorts of stuff. Are they, like I say, is it still Russia taking us up and down right now? Or I can't ever remember. You know what? I should really go do some research, but I'm not gonna. That was a little short. Let's do one more. 20. 20 is from Daz. Yet another one we haven't done yet. All right. Daz says, Henry Ford used the adage, available in any color, so long as it's black. What product will this tagline be used for in the future? I think you're baiting me into saying something racist, but I'm not gonna, other than commenting that it could be racist, in which case I'm already being racist. Damn it, you tricked me. Available in any color, so long as it's black. Ninja costumes? That would be one. What other products do we have that are only available in black? No, you know what? Seriously, where it should apply, coffee. You know what? Black coffee is really the only way to drink coffee. That is, when I first started drinking coffee, I wanted to put some milk in it, I wanted to put some sugar in it, and my dad told me that was a bunch of crap. You don't put anything in your coffee. He says, tell you what, you drink your coffee black for 1 week, and then you'll never need anything else in it again as long as you live. And by God, if he wasn't right. Seriously, just take the training wheels off your coffee and just drink it. Black is all you need. It's straight up. Amazingly, I hate to even admit this, but all of my kids love coffee. I mean, not like we let them have coffee, but, you know, special occasions. Can they have some of the coffee? Can they have it? Yeah, okay, whatever. You can have a little coffee, sure. And I'm telling you, from the time they were little, you know, here's the thing. Kid comes up to you and goes, ooh, can I have some of that? And you're drinking a big old cup of coffee. And all right, assuming you're not going to scald him, it's cooled down to the right temperature. You're like, yeah, sure. Sure, go ahead. Have some coffee. See what you think. And, you know, it's you being the cruel parent thinking they're going to try your coffee, and then they're going to be disgusted. And they're like, oh, my God, why'd you let me drink that? Right? Right? No. No. My kids, from the time they were 4 or 5 years old, we would try that on them, and they would finish the whole cup if you didn't take it away from them. They love coffee. I don't know what's wrong with them. Black coffee, because that's all I ever drink is black coffee. That's all my wife ever drinks is black coffee. And they would drink the whole thing if you let them. Holy crow. So anyway, yeah, I'm going to apply that adage to coffee, even though it's not really applied to the color. It's actually coffee is just black coffee is just the style because it's dark, I guess. But anyway, I'm over explaining. You guys want to do one more? One more. All right, last one is number 40. 40 comes from, hey, of course we'll finish up on Ronster. That's awesome. Ronster says, tube socks, crew socks, no-show socks, or no socks? Crew. I like crew socks. I don't like tube socks. I mean, I'll wear any sock. I don't like the low or no-show. I like having socks that actually cover my ankles. But otherwise, yeah, crew socks. That's pretty much every sock I have. I have very few white socks. Mostly I have a big drawer full of black crew socks. That's what I wear. That's it. All right. I think we're done. Say goodnight, R2. Heck yeah.